echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations innovate and grow value in a digital world. Episode 40, People Analytics. In today's episode, we will discuss how Google uses data, statistics, and social science methodologies to help continuously improve the organization and create one of the best places to work. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. And welcome back, Natalie Pucco, for another insightful conversation. Hi, Natalie. Would you mind introducing our guest for today?
Absolutely. Hi, Chris. Today we're speaking with Mary Kate, who leads our people analytics team, and she is going to help us peek into how Google as an organization uses data and statistics to make Google a great place to work, and so that the leaders listening can take some of those key actionable insights and hopefully be inspired from those to implement in their organization. So with that, Mary Kate, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. So to start off with, I think the most obvious question is, what is people analytics?
Absolutely. You've already hinted a little bit in your introduction, but people analytics is the function within HR where we use social science, methodologies, statistics, data, organizational theory to help really fuel the decisions that make an incredible place to work. For example, what my side of the team does is that we look at employee feedback and experiences and engagement across the entire employee lifecycle. That means actually from before you're ever even a Googler, when you're just a candidate, we will reach out and say, hey, how's that experience applying to Google? What were your interviews like? Have you had a positive impression of the company so far? And then once you're here and you're a Googler, we ask, hey, how is onboarding for you? We ask your manager, hey, how are your Nooglers, which are what we call new Googlers? How are they doing so far? And for everybody, every year, we ask employee experience questions around in our big employee survey, Google Geist, and we take a moment to reflect on how the whole company is doing as a whole in terms of our engagement, our feelings about our priorities and strategies. That's annually. And then even after you leave Google, we're asking you, hey, we know you made the decision to leave. What were the factors that played into that decision so that we can understand both the pull factors, what's interesting about your new opportunity, and the push factors, like what was it at Google that maybe wasn't working so well? So we can continuously learn and use that data to feed the programs, processes, policies that really shape our workplace experience for Googlers.
So Mary Kate, does this function, the people analytics team, does this sit inside HR? Because I think a lot of listeners or leaders listening is like, wow, this is potentially a new function. Like, where does this sit? Is this uniquely Google or is this something that other organizations do?
So I have been within people analytics for 10 years at Google. And back in those days, we were very new. People hadn't heard of people analytics, didn't understand what they did. And we were a very new function. We've always been situated within HR, so that's right. And we've always kind of supported the decision-making of both leadership within HR and leadership in the company more generally as the business is sorting out really how do we create the sort of business and workplace we need to support that business. So we are definitely an HR function. We are not that new. We've been at Google, I think, the team themselves of at least 15 years. We were the original people analytics team, but now we're fairly common across industry. You can find people analysts at not just technology companies like our top competitors, but also in consumer packaged good companies, insurance companies. And there's both sort of old school people analytics, right? We've always had to know how many people are in an organization and is the workplace growing? How much do we have to set aside for compensation? All of that. So there's always been an analytical component to HR. But where people analytics kind of pushed a bit further was really in the thoughtful application of social science methodology and theory. So things like experimentation, understanding how we communicate with Googlers and looking at, well, what if we tried this different thing out or that different thing out, and running it more as a thoughtful experiment where we're collecting data along the way and comparing the data. I like to tell people the story about my first day at Google, because I was greeted with a group. Actually, it ended up being my own team greeted me. It was a group of people analysts, a group of social scientists who were running an experiment about how to orient new Googlers to Google. And so I was given a t-shirt, we played games together to kind of form a bond. And it turned out that that was all part of an experiment about how best to onboard new employees. So my very first day at Google was actually part of a people analytics experiment. And that kind of thoughtful experimentation, I took a survey, they watched how likely we were to leave based on that experience. All of that data was tracked. And so that's the sort of work we've been doing within the people analytics function.
You know, I reflect back on my first day at Google, and it was definitely memorable. Even the differences between how I went and picked up a computer. You know, I've been working with other companies, and it would take weeks before I got a computer. And at Google, I went through an assembly line, and everything was pre-programmed and handed to me on the spot. It was incredible. But it's one thing to produce a really interesting and impactful experience on day one. It's another thing to continuously create those impactful moments from an employee's perspective throughout their career. From your point of view, how do you manage that? Maybe we'll call it a life cycle from the first day to the 1,000th day.
100%. And there's so many aspects to employee experience, and there's so many of those moments. And I think there's sort of the table stakes. There are the things we know you just have to have solid in terms of the daily experience of an employee. Number one is almost always their team and manager, right? You have to be able to have a collaborative, positive team. And our team has done a tremendous amount of research around what really drives positive team sentiment and experience. We know that there are particular aspects of teams that are high functioning and those that aren't. And we have really built a lot of training around that within Google. So understanding, for example, the importance of a very academic term, psychological safety, actually, which I learned when I was a PhD student. When I came to Google, I said, I really think that this idea around psychological safety probably has a place in the applied world of a real corporation. And so we looked into it. And what we found was that psychological safety was one of the biggest predictors of that positive team experience on the day-to-day. Not on the first day when everything's exciting and you realize about the free food and all of that. No, every day. When you're having a bad day, when you're having a good day, when the project's going sideways, when the project is doing awesome and launching, all of that. Your team is really the underpinning of that. And this idea of psychological safety is one that says that it's really fundamental that we are not that punitive with our team. So we give our team space to try things out, experiment, make mistakes, and provide the feedback about that in an environment that is very safe, psychologically safe for teams. So that's one of the key ways in which we just keep the experience going. That's less flashy, obviously, than getting the pre-programmed computer and the t-shirt and the beanie hat that we give every Googler. But it's actually, I think, much more foundational for the experience of the daily coming into work when things get mundane. And the other side of that is obviously managers. And I think it's kind of become a truism now that people don't leave companies, people leave managers. Because when that relationship with your manager sours, it's just one of the most toxic and poisonous experiences an employee can have. Whether you're at Google or any company, I mean, whether you're at a small startup, whether you're at a big established 100-year-old CPG kind of company, like making sure that folks really feel that their manager has their best interests at heart, is willing to coach them and develop them, that their manager make sure that they are working on the right work, understand their priorities, have clear roles and responsibilities. There are fundamental aspects of that management role. At Google, we talk a lot about 10X. How do we 10X something? How do we take something to that next level? And the amazing thing about managers is that they're kind of a built-in 10X factor, right? If you have great managers, everyone they touch within their teams, within their collaboration spheres, they instantly 10X the experience for everyone on their team and each one of their collaborators. And so just like as we've done with teams, we've also looked into like what really makes great managers and make sure that we're constantly reiterating those messages, developing our managers, rewarding our best managers.
Those two particular research exercises, which you just mentioned there, Project Aristotle for the leaders listening. That's the five things we believe make effective teams. And then secondly, you just mentioned Google's Project Oxygen, which is the study which shows what makes a great manager. And I point that out so the leaders listening, if you want to dive deeper into those key results, you can see those studies on rework.withgoogle.com. So if you want to go deeper, they are two really great assets that you can actually take those key frameworks and learnings. The part that I love the most is in that Google's Project Oxygen research, when we looked at what makes a great manager. And I often work with leadership teams, particularly helping them, guiding them through large scale transformation and large scale change. And the thing that surprises the leaders the most when I ask them out of that research study, what is the highest contributing or weighting factor to what makes a great manager, at least from our research at Google? And the number one thing is that leaders, first and foremostly, a great coach. It's interesting to see that when I ask that questions in these leadership masterclasses, it's not the most obvious answer for a lot of leaders, but it's so clearly in our research. And I can see that in our research, we even went through the process of what would teams look like if we took away managers, which again is a really interesting research result. So yeah, the focus on a good coach, I think, is really, really key, particularly in large scale transformations, not only a good coach, but also active and visible leadership and sponsorship, walking the walk, talking the talk.
In the middle of the Olympics, watching that level of human performance is always so astounding. And it's so interesting that behind every great gymnast, diver, runner are great coaches, right? Like, you need to be able to have someone with you to be observing your performance, providing feedback, providing additional context. And I think that is the relationship that drives performance both in a workplace, just as it does in athletics. And in my mind, it goes back to that team idea as well, right? So a great coach provides feedback. Well, when do you feel like listening to someone's feedback? When there's that psychological safety, when you know that they're telling you the truth, when they're doing it to improve your own performance because they're doing it out of care and consideration for your development, and because you have a great and an aspirational team goal. A lot of times as a people analyst from Google, people's like, oh yeah, well, at Google, you can have those fancy things. But these things aren't fancy. These things are fundamental to any team, whether it's a small, scrappy team at a nonprofit that's scraping it together for their big goal. Well, what feedback can you provide to each other? And how can you provide that in a way that's not intimidating, not punitive, but actually rewarded through enhanced performance?
Yeah, I think that's the key there. It's that rewarding of servitude. It's putting somebody else ahead of you. And a lot of times, especially across corporate America, there is a very, we'll call it a selfish attitude within leadership. What are you going to be able to do for me? As opposed to the manager saying, what can I help you with? Now, and I see that across Google everywhere. And I think that is one of the biggest differences is just in our hiring practices and our ability to find individuals who want to support your individual goals and needs so that you can be more successful. And that security in those conversations allows us to be able to become that much more productive. And it's that openness and realness of conversation at Google that I think is truly something that other organizations can immediately start improving upon, but they have to be willing to. And I think that's where Google really sets the bar.
Yeah. And it's so key to our mission, right? Like, we are here. Helpfulness is key to like our each and every one of our products. It's about putting the user first. And I think when you have a really aspirational mission, like, who doesn't want to do that, right? Who doesn't want to be helpful and to create impact for others and to be able to do that at scale? And for so much of our business is helping other businesses, right, to achieve what their goals are. And so I think it helps a lot that within our teams, we're also driven by well, how can we help ourselves create these unbelievable products to help other businesses to succeed? I was just actually listening to our earnings call, and Philip and Sundar were both making the case, like, our business succeeds when others succeed. And I think that idea of success through the success of others is also really baked into our team mentality, into what we try to do as an HR function as well. Like, we succeed when Googlers succeed.
Yeah, we had a new head of Australia join us just earlier this week. And when he started, he said, if you work for me, I work for you. And I thought that was a really powerful statement, one of the first things that he mentioned when he opened up our team call. And I thought, you know, that mutual exchange of value, that we're in it together, that leading with versus leading over type mentality, I think was really key to kicking off that relationship and that leadership. Mary Kate, can you give us an example of some business challenges you think are worth solving by using people analytics? And perhaps particularly you can talk us through Google Geist, because I know a lot of the leadership teams that we work with, they're always very keen to understand how we do our employee feedback and take some of those key learnings and implement them in their business. Can you help uncover that a little bit for us?
Absolutely. I think there's such a urgent example right now with people trying to decide whether or not we are comfortable going into the office. Are we more productive in the office, more productive at home? We're in this incredible transformation as a business, I think as a society, as a world, as we come out of the COVID pandemic, or maybe we're not out of it. I don't know. And the decision to shut down, I think, was the simpler one, or not shut down, but to shut down the offices and for everyone to retreat home was a simpler one because it was a matter of safety. And it was clear that there was a very strong risk to going back to the office. And now we've learned a lot of lessons from this sort of incredible forced experiment, if you will, in sudden working from home, sudden remote work. And for all the things we've just been talking about, right, that those relationships with your manager, those relationships with your team, the direction we get from our leadership, how do those survive in a world where we don't see each other face to face? And so this year, when we were looking at Google Geist, which is our annual employee engagement survey, one of our big questions, well, we had two really fundamental questions. One was, how can we use Google Geist? How can we use Googlers' feedback about what this has been for them to help us guide the year ahead in terms of decisions around working from home versus working from the office, flexibility, hybrid models, all of that. And the other was, what has this done to our culture? Because we've been running some pulse surveys throughout to understand well-being, connectedness, productivity, and using that feedback on a much more frequent cadence because decisions were being made constantly about the current state of affairs in the last year. But we had this big moment to really look back and to assess how we'd been doing and to learn important lessons to guide us moving forward. And so this year in Googleize, one of the things we did is we actually asked Googlers, like, hey, since you've been doing this for a while, tell us, like, what is your ideal scenario? Where would you do your best heads down work? Where do you do your best collaborative work? Where are you best able to maintain your well-being? And we had all sorts of hypotheses because everyone does, right? Everyone has a theory. Oh, it's good for engineers, but it's bad for sales. It's bad for sales. It's good for engineers. Like, it's like more for the junior folks and the senior folks, this, that. And so we were like, well, let's see, you know, we have all got a million theories about what's going on here. Let's really use this moment where we have this, for us, it's a census survey. The response rate is so high that we can look at all the way down, very tiny detailed slices of the data to understand and pinpoint different populations as well. So it was kind of our moment. And we asked, I think it was like over 25 different aspects of work, from well-being, heads down, teamwork, brainstorming, rewards and recognition, all of that. Like, where do you think that's best? Is it in the office or at home or neither? And we were so dumbfounded, honestly. Like, our team just, like, what we found was that in general, for more individualistic things, home was a little bit better. And for more collaborative things, the office was a little bit better. But for the bulk, for like nearly everything, it was very neutral, very neutral. The people said, I can collaborate from the office. I can collaborate from home. I can do heads down work in the office. I can do heads down work at home. And worse, this is what drove us bonkers. There weren't these differences between people that we were hoping to see. We thought, oh, well, certainly people who are caregivers, maybe with children at home, they're definitely going to want to get back to the office. But then maybe it's like the heads down coders who just want to soak up the code all the time, they're definitely going to want to stay home. We didn't find hardly any differentiation. I think it speaks to how many articles have we all seen and read about like the future of work and, oh, like this incredible remote moment. And actually it comes down to, it all depends. It's all a little neutral. We can work wherever. It depends on kind of what we're doing that day, what we're doing that week, who we're working with. And it doesn't depend much on these very hard kind of characteristics of our work, the hard characteristics of our life. It's all very gray, I guess is the right word for it. An incredible amount of gray area. And that does not help, right? Like, that's not what leaders ever want to hear, is that, oh, there's a gray area. They would like us to find like some easy, hard and fast rule to be like, here's black, here's white, here's like the rules we should have, instead of, well, we might need to have some gray area.
Employee surveys aren't uniquely Google. Like, a lot of organizations have 360 surveys. But one thing that I'm hearing and which I've experienced myself is the response to actually filling out this data is really, really high. Why is it so high? And what can leaders listening take from those learnings? Is it the fact that we actually action that data, that the data is transparent? I know for a fact that I can go in as a Googler, and many other Googlers can, and actually see the results from every leader across the organization, which as a leader in Google is quite daunting to have that data internally available. Why is it so high, and what can leaders learn from that listening?
I think you already hinted to the number one thing, which is we do take action based on the data. And that's every single year when we go, we share the findings out in a tool where anyone can find any large leader's report. And that transparency is so essential. So I think that builds a lot of interest, right? Like, people just want to see how their colleagues are feeling, how the company is doing. And so that builds in the interest. It's not that interesting to take a survey if you don't get to see the results, right? If every time I got one of those phone calls, like, hey, do you have 5 minutes to answer some questions about like whatever, you know, if they said, well, we'll send you the report about how people in your neighborhood feel about breakfast cereal, I feel like I would be so much more likely to answer their questions about breakfast cereal, because I'm of course curious to know what my neighbors are eating for breakfast, even though it's of absolutely no relevance to me. I mean, I think that's sort of what we provide in Google Geist, is that we all care about each other. We want to know how everyone's feeling. And so that transparency is really key. And then what that transparency fuels is accountability, which is so powerful. I mean, accountability in the organizational science literature is one of the few sort of golden elements to getting great work done. If you hold people accountable, it really changes the dynamic very quickly in people who may otherwise want to ignore results, shuffle them under the rug. Bringing those to light and saying, hey, actually, let's talk about this, totally changes the dynamic and really inspires a lot more action than if we didn't do that. So I think transparency is so fundamental. Willingness to have those conversations. So every year we share out at a big company-wide meeting what we've learned, not just like the, oh, we got this number on this question, we got this number on this question, but, oh, and we see these deeper relationships within these data. We find that working from home is related to X, Y, and Z. We find that in the open text comments, people are talking about it in these ways. Really diving in and sharing those insights back to Googlers, I think really inspires a very high response rate we see for Google Geist. And so throughout the year, people refer to it and really kind of use that moment to fuel their priorities for their teams, for their organizations throughout the year.
So a moment ago, you were talking about the gray matter, and let's try to remove some of the gray matter for our listeners. If we could boil all this down to three simple things that listeners can implement today in their organizations, what might be just three bullet points that they can take to their office and do right now?
Home or office, right? It doesn't matter where you are. I think number one is thinking about relationships. I think really considering the key relationships within your office or organization or team, whatever the workplace may be, and thinking through how can you build stronger relationships within your organization. That, I think, is the foundation really of so much of what we talk about when we are talking about people analytics. So whether those are relationships among the team or the manager, building strong, healthy, psychologically safe relationships where people have the opportunity to provide feedback. And that brings me to the second piece of it, which I think feedback is so key, partially because that's the piece of people analytics that I specialize in, but feedback to both leaders on how things are going, because feedback is, that's the information about the key thing. Without the feedback, you don't know how those relationships are going. You're not sure how people feel about their teams. You're not sure how they're feeling about their managers. And the feedback is that mechanism for understanding and in some ways being that Olympic style coach for your organization or for your management or for your leadership team. And so making sure that you set aside time and resources to collect feedback and, more importantly, share it back, have conversations and show that you're taking action based on that feedback. That is such a virtuous loop of positivity can be created, even when things are looking dismal in the organization, even when things maybe aren't starting out at a really healthy spot, to say, hey, here's what we've heard is going on. Here's how we think this can be changed. Here's how we're committing to making a difference and running that feedback cycle through in order to improve those relationships. And I think third, I haven't talked much about the importance of data, but where you have the opportunity to have data, to look at data, it is so fundamental to have solid data, whether that's an employee engagement, whether that's attrition or hiring practices, thinking very strategically around what data do you need? What data will you want later when you're creating these decision points and using that? So if you've got solid relationships and a virtuous feedback cycle, and then data to help understand and diagnose what's going on when those things aren't going well, you're 90% of the way there.
I love it. Relationships, feedback, and data. Natalie, do you have some rapid fire questions?
I do, to finish off. So Mary-Kate, here we go. Fill in the blank with one word. The most critical function of a high-performing team is?
Psychological safety. Making sure that people have the ability to share their perspectives in a way that it will not be penalized and will in fact be seen as an attempt to improve and grow that team.
That was two words, but I'll let that one slide. Okay, second question. What's a lesson that keeps being put in front of you as a data analytics people leader every single day over and over again?
I think the importance of neutrality. I think that is one thing that this is getting a little bit in the weeds in terms of how we run people analytics at Google and how it's run in other places, but being able to provide neutral data. Often people have hypotheses. Often people have an answer they really want to get out of the data. And we've been very fortunate within Google having a setup where we can say, actually, we know you might be thinking X, Y, or Z, or we know you want the data to show this, but it's showing something else. And so I would say really enabling that neutrality so that there's no need to push the data or the answers in a particular direction.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. I've often heard this described as strong opinions loosely held.
Yes, strong opinions loosely held. I think a lot of what we do is just trying to ward off what we in psychology land called confirmation bias. We all have our beliefs and we're often looking for data to support what we believe to be true rather than looking for data that provides the most neutral and most realistic description of what's actually happening.
Final question. What's the most interesting application of technology you've seen in the past 6 to 12 months? It could be in the people analytics space or it just could be in everyday life.
Oh man, interesting applications of technology. I live in Silicon Valley, so they're everywhere to me. But I think I'm deeply fascinated by all of this neurotechnology, right? There are ways now they literally can show the images that people are seeing through their eyes by looking at the neurotransmissions in their minds, which means actually soon we'll be able to tap in and see what people are seeing as they dream. The world of neurotechnology is just so fascinating to me. We're a long way from having that be in any way applied to the workplace, but I think there's such an incredible sci-fi movie, what we're starting to be able to do in terms of the human mind.
For those of you who are listening, we actually have sleep pods at Google, so we can take naps and refresh. I love those things because I feel like a nap a day gets me energized and thinking properly. So just imagine now in the future, instead of a nap pod, we have a Google Geist pod. You go, you sleep in it. It taps into your mind.
Yes.
Can you see that?
I love this idea. I'm all for it. I'm hoping that we can have this as an enterprise solution soon. You can just tap into your workers while they're sleeping. We can have 2-minute workdays instead of 8-hour workdays because we'll have done all of our work and our dreams. I love this.
Well, thank you, Mary Kate. It's been absolutely a wonderful conversation. Very insightful. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I'll come back anytime you want to talk about people analytics.
And thank you, Natalie. Good to see you again.
Great to see you. Thanks so much, Mary Kate.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, or if you have questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can find us throughout social media, all at That Digital Show. And join us next week for another masterclass series with Natalie, all here on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.